Well, catching up with the last word of Jesus asking the question, do you understand? What's the problem here? Well, if you read these stories in the Gospel more than 10 times in a row, you will definitely see a different angle. And if you revisit that same passage like 6 months later and read it 10 times again, you will see another aspect of it. That's why a lot of people were saying that this book is written in the words, human words, but it's alive. It changes. So is this the book changes, or is it that you change? Or is it the God who is alive giving you a different insight on the same thing? You know, once upon a time, I was looking at the tree. I used to love looking at the trees. It started probably when I was 5. Just sat one day on a bench and looked at a tree. And the tree was moving with the wind. Somehow it was so amazing to me. You know why? I didn't know any science about how the wind and the blowing and all that in time. I just saw then it felt like tree is waving to me. And I liked it. Wow, that tree is waving to me. So that became my somewhat habit of just looking at the trees whenever I have some trouble and enjoying it. And I still do. After knowing all that, let's say, scientific fact that trees actually don't wave to me, I still feel somehow that tree is still waving to me. So is it that tree is really waving to me, or is it something that I project on it and becomes meaning to me? We call some things true, some things false. We sometimes say certain things fact and certain things falsity. Well, if you really look into those areas really deeply, sometimes you get to wonder what's really true and what's really not. Jesus is talking about this yeast of Pharisees, or more likely leaven, because in this age, the yeast, the term yeast was actually discovered in late 1860s. So in this age, people had no idea what yeast was, or is. They just knew that somehow if you bake, somehow mix the bread, flour with the water, and put it in a certain temperature for a while, it changes. And if you measure a certain time and bake it at that time, it tastes better. That's all that they knew. But somehow Jesus is saying that that leaven is not good, especially that which is from Pharisees. And if you really read the Bible, Leviticus, I just took a short portion of it. The whole Bible is saying that whenever you're offering something to God, or this is a holy week, you shouldn't eat any bread with leaven in it. The truth is now, or, I don't know, scientific fact is that the time that when you're eating bread, baked bread, there is no leaven in it. So, is it true to say that you eat bread in which leaven is, or not? Did God didn't know about it? So, that's my first thought and think about it. As you probably all know, that human history has a few parts that kind of major driving forces behind. One of that is seeking for the truth, which has been really great deal in the both in the West and the East. And this person, Swedenborg, kind of saying to us that, you know what, actually the absolute truth is not really available for any creature, including the highest angels in heaven. So in his book, reading Swedenborg's book, I'm hearing from a lot of people, it's very hard, because he has definitely two different perspectives in his writing. One that is seeing it from God's perspective. In this way, nothing's good. Everything's bad in a way. If you compare that the point, the measure point is God, and if you compare anything, everything that's created is impure. So nothing can be good in that context. Now, if you see from human toward God, as long as you go a little better or looking at that way, everything is good. Because you are standing at the lowest point. So it all gets better. So, which way is the truth then? That's the million-dollar question. So we oftentimes talk about truth is, and I realize actually, whenever I say the truth is, the word, it means that the way I perceive to be acceptable and agreeable. So my version of truth is definitely different from your version of the truth. So if we agree on that, then what are the doctrines? What are the things that religions in all over the world imposing on you, saying that this is the right thing and that's the bad thing? You should do this, you should do that. If you do this, God will curse you. If you do this, God will reward you. The East of Pharisees is a problematic one, and it's not about something physical, as you can assume. It's more likely an idea, actually. The idea that these Pharisees had about God and what it means to worship God, and even what it means to be a right person. And according to the Gospels, again, matter is complicated. If you read the factual history, Pharisees are not that bad at all. But in the Gospel, there is a certain representation of Pharisees which is written here and described. They are self-centered instead of God-centered. They respect formality instead of meaning and actual life in it. So instead of actually loving somebody and helping somebody a way to be righteous before God, if they observe all the rites and rituals, like saying, oh, this is time to pray, so you pray in the middle of the marketplace. They're being pious and they're being righteous. And that's the way to cultivate toward God. In a way of saying that, for them, it is more important to feel I am right and I am good versus really being good. Well, then again, you can challenge that saying, what does it mean by being really good? Because then there are a lot of people who help poor people, not because they really want to help them, but because there is a leverage to get this something else. So, it goes always back to, actually, the intention, motivation of the person, the doer. So what is it that you really want by doing this? What do you believe? And Jesus was quite shocked in here saying that, you know what Jesus was saying, beware of the East of Pharisees, and disciples are whispering to each other. Why is he saying this? Because we didn't bring enough bread. We only have one bread. And there are 13 of us. We're on a boat. We can't get, you know. you know, see the change of the perspective. Jesus was talking about something that is essentially important in their spiritual cultivation. And yet, disciples are totally concerned about the food they are about to eat for their body. And had no idea what he was talking about. It's a different perspective. And that's the voice of God in a way. So I was having fun actually studying about what yeast is and all those microorganic creatures in our body. Also, I read that each one of you are composed of about 100 trillion cells, and only 10% of them are considered as a human. Good news, isn't it? And they just discovered 10,000 new species that live in your body. We don't know what they do to us, but they live on us. But isn't it a miracle that you, composed of 100 trillion cells, act as a single unity? And you do, your whole body obeys your will. That you somehow wants to move to the left, it moves. To the right, it moves. You want to do this section, it does it. Your hand itself is made of probably, I don't know how many cells in it. But it somehow moves as a part of you. So where is the power, actually? Is it in the hand, or is it in the will? The motivation. Yeast of Pharisees, I would call it mental virus. Something comes into your mind and triggers something else, changes your perspective. If you read like all the stories, like one version I read is one of the parts of the Chinese state story I used to love. I still enjoy them. There's king, an emperor, and this one subject A, subject B. And subject A is supposedly the second most powerful person in the kingdom, empire, and really buddy to the emperor. Subject B wants that power. So he consulted to B, the most smart and sneak person in the empire. And this person kind of thought about it about a long time and said, just one thing. You go to the emperor, just tell one thing. Is it human nature to be faithful to one person or not? Just one thing. That's all they said. Hearing the thing, emperor, a few days later, actually killed his subject. A. Why? It is not about either this subject was faithful to emperor or not. It was emperor's own mind, not trusting anybody. Cannot believe that a person is actually fully faithful to himself. So he really thought that this guy really has hidden agenda behind it and maybe trying to kill me. And if you know that emperor only lives like average 10 years in Chinese history, about every 10 years, and 90% of them are either assassinated or poisoned or mysterious causes of death. So, moment to become an emperor, the first thing and the most important thing you have to remember in your mind is that I cannot trust anybody. So, this person only triggered that thought. And that was good enough to break this bond between emperor and subject A. And there's a long story about it, the whole book. So, one thought, one doubt comes into your mind is sometimes enough to actually put whole shadow in your mind about somebody you love, somebody you trust. But at the same time, one good thought, one powerful illumination that comes into your mind is sometimes good enough to see the whole life in a different perspective. Perfect example is actually Buddha. Gautama Siddhartha, when he was in his cultivation, he left his palace. He was prince, but he left it, acknowledging that life is so impermanent. And I am going to die anyway, meaning so temporary. What is it that is most meaningful that I could do with this life? And he found a way to be a monk, to be enlightened. He thought that's the best. So he followed the yogic tradition of this real painful way of cultivation. And at the moment, he was starved to death. And he thought to himself, wait a sec, I'm about to die. If I die now, I'll be reborn again. I have to redo the whole thing. And there's no guarantee that I'll get the enlightenment. So if I don't get it next to life, doing all that, I have to come back and do it again. And how many times is it that is enough? Nobody can guarantee it. So he realized torturing body is not a way to obtain mental enlightenment. Enlightenment belongs to mind, not to the body. That one thought was his enlightenment. He changed the whole perspective on it. So, well, after that, he got up, he went to the village, he ate a lot, and rested. Because of that, the five followers, disciples, who were following him at the time, were actually furious against him, but they abandoned him. But he didn't really care. So after eating and resting for a while, he went to the deep meditation, and he obtained his enlightenment. Again, it's a long story. So one thought was good enough to change everything. So Jesus is warning against the east of Pharisees. It could be applied to many things. I actually am really hesitant to share all the things that I want to share because I read many, many versions of history of religion. And if you read history of religion, you can see so many times in so many periods in so many places that religion has been abused. It just, forms are just countless. And places, east, west, it doesn't really matter. Whenever a religion is abused by a person to serve self-interest, either that's for power, that's for money, that's for reputation, it doesn't matter. It happens. So, how do you know that's the case or not? Actually, Jesus' advice too, but we can also take advice from both Buddha and Confucius too. Believing that you have innate capability, you have ability, inborn ability to see that and actually protect yourself. And according to Confucius, you do it by, well, seeing, talking, walking, hearing, standing, sitting by the manner, by the proper manner. Here, manner means the proper action that you do as a human being. And Buddha's suggests the same thing, like eight right ways. You sit right, you talk right, you walk right, you read right, you think right, you intend right. Then your mind will be calm and your rationality may be at work with good, actually, background or foundation. You all have rationality. You're endowed with it. In my understanding, any religion that takes away freedom and rationality of individual is not a good one. Because it is your innate capability that God gave to you to be a properly human being. Yet if somebody takes that away, then what is left behind is that you trust and obey what I say to you. I was just having a conversation with my two persons, Korean persons. One of them is pastor, one of them is lay leader in this group. And we're talking about it. And in Korea, in many churches, it's said, but what they are worshiping is not God, but the minister. Because minister says, I'm the servant of God, I'm the prophet of God. Therefore, whatever I say to you is from God. And certainly, you have no access to God. You don't talk to God. You don't see God. So I do have access to God. So you obey me. It's somehow, maybe logically it makes sense if you agree on all that. But the truth is, again, in my understanding, in the Gospels, and in all other religions, every single human being is equal, or equally endowed, with the capability and ability to not only perceive the divine, but also understand the way. So, beware of the East of Pharisees. Whenever you have an idea that comes into your mind and try to bring the shadow upon you, darkness upon you, sometimes anger upon you, sadness upon you, doubts about each other upon you, these are not from God. And you have power and ability to say a simple no. And it works. If you say no in the beginning, 100%. If you take about 5 minutes, 90%. If you take an hour in it, too late. That's too late. It already got you. So when those things come to you, say no in the beginning. And as Jesus is saying, again, beware of the East of Pharisees. You know they're wrong. That's what he's saying. You know they're wrong. But why would you entertain that thought in your mind? So may God bless you in your journey. And you in your meditation upon the truth that is from God. Amen.